It is Wednesday, December 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's call for a ban on Muslims entering the U.S. sparks widespread reaction.
Trump's kind of defied conventional wisdom at every turn, and it's hard to say if he stumbles into these things.
There is optimism in Myanmar following the meeting of the country's two most prominent politicians, and ZZ Top musician Billy Gibbons releases a solo album with Afro-Cuban influences. It's all ahead. U.S. and world leaders have roundly criticized real estate billionaire and 2016 Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump, who on Monday called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. He made the call following last week's San Bernardino, California mass shooting. But Trump declined to back down during a phone interview on the ABC television program Good Morning America Tuesday.
What I'm doing is I'm calling very simply for a shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. And here's a key: until our country's representatives can figure out what is going on. I hope it will go quickly. I hope we can figure it out. But we have to look at people. We have to use vigilance in our country, or we're going to have many more World Trade Centers, and our country will never be the same.
Trump also condemned President Obama's efforts in leading the fight against Islamic State militants in the Middle East. He said, "We are at war, and we have a president who doesn't want to say that." Late Sunday, Mr. Obama urged Americans in a nationally televised address not to turn against Muslims in the wake of the California and Paris attacks. American University government professor Jennifer Lawless says strategically what he's doing makes sense. She says he cannot win the Republican nomination solely on his opposition to illegal immigration, so he has to cast a wider net linking immigration with terrorism. Rice University political scientist Paul Brace tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the controversial positions of Trump so far haven't hurt his political aspirations.
Trump's kind of defied conventional wisdom at every turn, and it's hard to say if he stumbles into these things and they work for him, or if he's got some people doing research for him and he's testing these things behind the scenes before he does them. Definitely plays to fears, but it's also earned him virtually the universal condemnation of every leader in the United States on both sides of the political aisle.
Is there a disconnect between the political elite in this country and the average voter?
I would say in Trump's case this year, there would be an indication definitely so. Nobody on the Republican side can get any traction, it seems, against Trump.
I wanted to ask you about this whole issue of the Muslims and then the earlier controversy that he talked about with regard to illegal immigration. Is he doing the nation a service in one sense that he's finally opening up the debates that need to be discussed in this country?
On immigration, he opened it by saying a lot of things that are demonstrably untrue. I guess that's one way to start a debate, is to say something that's completely off the wall and then let other people rebut you. You know, it doesn't matter, it seems, whether what he says is true or not. It gets a lot of traction. He is incredible at getting FaceTime on TV. I mean, I pull up Reuters on my Apple TV, and the first five news stories are Donald Trump. And that's pretty much any day of the week. And you don't even know anybody else is running. He's either started a debate or he's figured out a way to be, I think, the most salient individual in this campaign season.
His comments come as a new Associated Press poll suggested that people are very concerned about immigration of Muslims into this country, given what happened in San Bernardino.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of fear, and I think some of it rightfully so. When you have the fellow in San Bernardino who was born in this country, though, and he's not an immigrant. He's not a refugee. What are you going to do about people like him? The whole radicalization thing, I think, has a lot of people afraid, because this otherwise unassuming couple didn't catch anybody's attention, not the authorities, not their neighbors or anything.
That's Paul Brace of Rice University. He says Trump's position, while controversial, is not unconstitutional, and while immigrant restrictions can be imposed, once in America, Muslims are protected by the Constitution's 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause. And now for reaction on social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Olin Akisholu.
Hi, Sarah. Well, there's a lot of discussion on social media about Trump's latest comments on preventing Muslim people from entering the United States. And that's sort of a pattern that's formed around him in the past couple of months, where he says something that a lot of people find distasteful, and then people attack him for it on social media. Something interesting happened on Twitter yesterday. It started with news outlets reporting White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest saying Trump's latest remark should disqualify him from the presidency. And it seems like a lot of people took this seriously at first, thinking that he was actually now disqualified from running for president. And that's why hashtag Trump is disqualified party, that started trending early in the afternoon yesterday. So a lot of people started tweeting photos and GIFs of pop culture party scenes, some shots of Beyonce at red carpet events and scenes from movies saying, you know, we're glad he's disqualified. This is what it's like at this metaphorical party for the candidate. And then when people started to realize that he was not actually disqualified, they started doing photos and video clips of people getting really excited and then disappointed. But this is interesting. More than 120,000 people used that hashtag Trump is disqualified party in the last day. That's according to Topsy.
Well, what about Trump supporters? Is there any reaction from them on social media?
Yes, it does, however, seem like Trump is getting a little bit more heat from his latest comments than some in the past. But, of course, Trump has a very powerful social media presence. His Twitter account has 5.17 million followers. Compare that to President Obama, who has 5.4 million followers. So he's not too far behind. Yesterday, Trump tweeted, "So many foolish people that refuse to acknowledge the uncertainty of certain people coming into U.S." That got retweeted more than 3,500 times, and that had also more than 8,500 favorites. So a lot of people still supporting him, at least on social media.
Thanks very much, Olin. That's International Edition's Olin Akisholu. Government employees at the California facility where 14 people were gunned down in what President Barack Obama calls a terrorist attack returned to work this week. Crowds gathered later on Monday evening for another candlelight vigil to remember those killed and wounded. VOA's Kane Faraba reports that while some in the area are trying to return to normal routines, the impending funerals and memorial services for the victims is a reminder that life is different in the wake of the attack.
Diamond Mendez feels it is important to show his support to the victims of the San Bernardino mass shooting, in part because of his own family history.
My father was murdered when I was three in Las Vegas. My grandmother was taken from me. 3 years ago, my cousin, Keith Lawrence, and Monica Kwan, his fiance, were murdered by Chris Dorner.
The 2013 manhunt for Christopher Dorner in Southern California dominated news headlines. In an act of retaliation after he was fired by the Los Angeles Police Department, 33-year-old Dorner ambushed Mendez's cousin Lawrence and his fiance Kwan, who was the daughter of a retired LAPD captain. Dorner later died in a standoff with law enforcement. When the San Bernardino shootings unfolded on December 2nd, Mendez recalled it was just one day shy of the 22nd anniversary of the burglary gone wrong that ultimately claimed the life of his father, Tracy Lee Lawrence.
He was shot, I think, 17 times or something. But he didn't die because of the bullets. He died because of a blood clot on Christmas Day, weeks later. So they attempted to kill my father, but I knew God had a reason for him not to die on the spot because, you know, he reconciled with us.
As Mendez watched the events in San Bernardino unfold on TV, he began to wonder if the victims had the opportunity his own father had in the final moments of his life.
Did they have time to reconcile? Did they go to work upset? And a lot of people don't know if it's going to be their last day or not.
Which is what brings Mendez here, to the expanding makeshift memorial for the victims and survivors of San Bernardino's tragedy. He says he's here to listen, to pray, but most importantly, to let those suffering know he is someone who intimately understands their grief.
When something like this happens, they don't feel it right away. I know they don't. it's like breath being taken from you. The minute it settles in, that's when you have to come in and not be peacemaker, but show that there is peace in front of this.
He says his advice to those enduring the intense grief in the wake of these attacks comes from a place of understanding.
This will get better only because there's joy that comes in the morning. And I'm not talking about daylight to darkness to daylight, but the morning, the shedding of the tears. So it's okay to remember them and to mourn, but there will become love and peace from it.
A peace that the victims and the community of San Bernardino still search for 6 days after the event that transformed their community. Kane Faribault, VOA News, San Bernardino, California.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Many of those who argue against human causation of climate change often point to a number of Earth's past climatic events and periods, such as the Little Ice Age and the medieval warm period, as examples of natural climate change. But now a new study suggests that the medieval warm period, or medieval climate anomaly, a time of unusually warm weather between the years 900 and 1300, may not have been the global event that had been thought. Studying beryllium-10 isotopes in boulders left in Greenland by thousands of years of glacial movement, the researchers found that the rocks were deposited by advancing glaciers between 975 and 1275. The researchers find that the concept of the medieval warm period may be Eurocentric than global. Recent research has also found evidence that areas of the world may have actually cooled off during that time. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, ZZ Top frontman Billy Gibbons releases a new album. Last week, Myanmar's political transition took another step forward when opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi, whose National League for Democracy party swept last month's elections, met with former dictator General Tan Shwe. Ron Corbin reports for VOA on what analysts say is a fragile balance in power between the still influential military and the widespread popular support for Aung San Suu Kyi.
Details of the secretive meeting of last Friday between former dictator General Tan Shwe and Aung San Suu Kyi, Myanmar's prospective national leader, came through the general's grandson, Ne Shwe Thwai Ong, by way of his Facebook social media page. Thwai Ong quoted Tan Shwe as saying the truth was that Aung San Suu Kyi would become Myanmar's future leader, and he supported her with all his efforts. Aung Saw, editor of the Irrawaddy newspaper, says the meeting highlighted the electoral success of Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy, NLD, and the political sea change now underway in Myanmar.
Former regime and the government leaders, and I think they realize that the paradigm is changing. It's a huge, major political landscape going to take place. Next year, which the NLD, that government is coming into power, and so I think they want to seek assurance as well as some kind of reconciliatory chat on those.
The meeting was the fourth between Myanmar's two most powerful figures of recent decades since the politically turbulent 1990s, when Aung San Suu Kyi, often under house arrest under the orders of Tan Shwe, led pro-democracy protests against the military junta. Kino Ma, a coordinator with the rights group Forum for Democracy in Burma, says the constitutional reforms remain at the heart of the NLD's political platforms. Kino Ma says people are now watching closely in the power shifts during the political transition.
For now, people are still very careful, not raising their doubt. You know, all of us want Aung San Suu Kyi to be able to make the best of her negotiation skills in this time. But it's very scary at the same time. What if the military, this former dictator, he already has his own term of the compromise to what is the maximum that he will negotiate. So if the negotiation ends to the point that there is no constitutional amendment, for example, and that is going to be a major trouble for NLD.
Kin Omar says General Tan Shwe was a very good strategist with the meeting because it also conveyed the key message that the general remains a highly influential figure over Myanmar's political direction. Bud Boji, a former political prisoner and activist, says there is also a strong groundswell of trust in Aung San Suu Kyi's efforts to move Myanmar, also known as Burma, despite the military's ongoing influence.
We hope for the best. So because, lady, if army leader really listen to people's choices or people's desire, they need to negotiate with Aung San Suu Kyi to become a president of Burma and also to work. New government can implement rule of law in the country. Army needs to help Aung San Suu Kyi.
In the days after she met General Tan Shwe, Aung San Suu Kyi called on NLD members to work with the military and former regime members, saying forgiveness is necessary in the steps towards national reconciliation. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views, presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
This is International Edition. Guitarist and singer Billy Gibbons is best known for his work with the band ZZ Top. But now, Gibbons has released his first solo album. International Edition's David Byrd has this look at the CD, which has an Afro-Cuban flavor that reaches back to Gibbons' childhood.
There's no mistaking Billy Gibbons' guitar work. The Rock and Roll Hall of Famer's fronting of ZZ Top has earned the Texas trio multiple gold and platinum albums in more than 40 years together. But now Gibbons has released his first solo album, Perfecto Mundo, which is marked by Afro-Cuban rhythms and a new band called the BFGs. Gibbons says that the process began with a phone call inviting him to perform without bandmates Dusty Hill and Frank Beard at the Havana Jazz Festival.
It seemed interesting until we put that word jazz in the figure, and I said, well, I don't know jazz. I know I can play some blues, I can play some rock. That other thing is well outside. However, who would want to pass up an opportunity to go to Cuba? Very few.
Gibbons called his friend and band leader Chino Ponce, who is from Havana. Ponce liked what he heard, and Perfecto Mundo began to take shape. Turns out Latin music is something that Billy Gibbons is familiar with after his father, himself a band leader, sent Billy to study with legendary Puerto Rican percussionist Tito Puente in 1962.
I was 13. I just turned 13 and showed up, did not have a care in the world, and fortunately, Tito Puente is one of these gifted individuals that during his lifetime he shared a genuine passion that made everything uplifted. And when he heard me hitting this and hitting that, he said, okay, you got it. He said, now we're going to place it. And that was the magic.
Gibbons has assembled a band that includes multiple percussionists, an organist, a pianist, a bassist, and, of course, Billy on guitar. Gibbons says the recording process felt more like a jam session.
It's basically a private club with no time clock running and no real thought of this, let's make a record. We were just making experiments in music that just happened to have an Afro-Cuban twist.
I want to tell you a story.
Billy Gibbons and the BFGs have released the first single off the new album, a cover of Roy Head's 1965 hit, Treat Her Right. They plan to tour in support of the album, including stops in Havana, Cuba, until February. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's the music, the rousing music there of Billy Gibbons. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Barack Obama recently addressed the American people following the terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California, which left 14 people dead and some 21 injured. "This was an act of terrorism," said President Obama, "designed to kill innocent people." The United States has been at war with terrorism since Al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 Americans on 9/11. But over the years, the terrorist threat has evolved into a new phase. Terrorists have turned to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that have occurred all over the world in recent weeks. "The United States has a plan to overcome this evolving threat," said President Obama.
"We will destroy ISIL and any other organization that tries to harm us. Our success won't depend on tough talk or abandoning our values or giving in to fear. That's what groups like ISIL are hoping for. Instead, we will prevail by being strong and smart, resilient and relentless, and by drawing upon every aspect of American power."
Specifically, the U.S. military will continue to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country where it is necessary. In Iraq and Syria, airstrikes are taking out ISIL leaders, heavy weapons, oil tankers, and infrastructure. The U.S. continues to train and equip tens of thousands of Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting ISIL on the ground in order to take away their safe havens. U.S. intelligence is working to disrupt ISIL's plots, cut off their financing, and prevent them from recruiting fighters. With American leadership, the international community has begun to establish a timeline to pursue ceasefires and a political resolution to the Syrian war. This strategy to destroy ISIL is supported by U.S. military commanders and counterterrorism experts, together with 65 countries that have joined an American-led coalition. "We will succeed in this mission," said President Obama. "Americans have always met challenges, whether war or depression, natural disasters or terrorist attacks, by coming together around our common ideals as one nation, as one people. So long as we stay true to that tradition, I have no doubt America will prevail."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.